Hello, and welcome to lecture 26 of ENM2, Physics 631 at Purdue University. Today we have one more topic to cover in Chapter 12, the treatment of invariant Green's functions, and which means relativistically invariant Green's functions. And then once I'm finished with that, I will skip ahead to chapter 14 and cover some topics. And if we have time in the last couple of lectures, we will cover some topics in other chapters of Jackson. So for the subject of invariant Green's functions, let's start from what we know about Maxwell's equations, in particular the inhomogeneous Maxwell's equations, read d alpha, f alpha beta, contracted on alpha, with the Einstein summation convention, is equal to 4 pi over c j beta. In Gaussian units, this is the form of the inhomogeneous Maxwell's equations. If we recast this or look at the form of Maxwell's equations in terms of the four potential A superscript alpha, right, we can obtain those equations by applying d by d alpha to f alpha beta, as is written here, contracting on alpha. And then we get the contraction of d sub alpha with d superscript alpha. That's the D'Alembertian or box operator, which I've written down here, 1 over c squared d squared by dt squared minus del squared. That's the first term in the left-hand side. But we also have a term minus. If we interchange the order of d alpha and d beta, we get d by d beta of d sub alpha contracted with a superscript alpha, which in the convenient Lorentz gauge, that d alpha contracted with a alpha is zero. And so all information about Maxwell's equations is in fact contained, once we agree on using the Lorentz gauge, as the D'Alembertian operator acting on A beta is equal to 4 pi over C J beta. A very simple form of Maxwell's equations with the invariant box operator or D'Alembertian operator, 1 over c squared d squared dt squared minus del squared. So we've already seen often in this course and last semester that such an inhomogeneous wave equation can be solved formally by using a Green's function. In this case, the operator determining the Green's function is this invariant box operator. So the box operator acting on the unprimed coordinates, which I indicate with a subscript x, and we'll call this invariant Green's function we need to determine, this capital D of x, x prime. And we'll simply look for a solution that this is equal to the four-dimensional Dirac delta function of the 4 vector x minus the 4 vector x prime, which is going to be a product. This 4-dimensional delta function is a product of delta x0 minus x0 prime for the time part of the x and x prime coordinates, and then an ordinary 3-dimensional Dirac delta function of the vector x, the spatial vector x minus the spatial vector x prime. And as we argued in deriving back in chapter 6, the Green's function for the wave equation, if there are no boundary surfaces, this invariant Green's function can only depend on z alpha, which is the difference between x alpha and x alpha prime, or x prime alpha. Which means we can go ahead and solve this in the case of no boundary surfaces in infinite space as the D'Alembertian operator acting in the z coordinate, acting on d of z, is equal to the four-dimensional Dirac delta function of in the four vector z. So we did, in fact, already solve this to obtain the retarded Green's function and the advanced Green's function last semester. We're indicating the retarded Green's function with the plus sign, which corresponds to waves propagating outward from a source disturbance, which is appropriate for creating a, like jiggling a charge here and then looking at waves propagating, electromagnetic waves propagating outward from that disturbance, as opposed to the advanced Green's function, we indicate with a minus sign, which would correspond to jiggling a charge here and there were waves in the past which are converging on that point. So if you recall, the solution we obtained in our present notation, with denoting capital R as the distance between spatial vectors x and x prime, gives the following to Green's function for the retarded plus and advanced minus Green's functions, which we're now going to call d plus or minus of z, is 1 over 4 pi capital R times this four-dimensional Dirac delta function, delta of x0 minus x0 prime, minus or plus capital R, which is Jackson's equation 12.132. And if we have the ability, if you like, to add a factor, a theta function, I think we did this also back in chapter 6, theta of x0 minus x0 prime, to only select the forward light cone, which corresponds to having observation times after the source time, which again would correspond to the plus sign in our invariant Green's function. If for some reason, and I might point out something we'll discuss in a later chapter, that Wheeler and Feynman have a Review of Modern Physics article where they actually do use, there are some cases where one, it's profitable to use the advanced Green's function. But for now, let's just stay with ordinary ideas of causality, that a jiggled charge or current here produces waves at a later time at a detector. That will be this theta of x0 minus x0 prime. But if you get into the Wheeler-Feynman ideas that use the advanced Green's function, you would have a theta function that looks at observation times before the source time and corresponding to the minus sign in our Green's function. So the text shows, I guess it's on page 614, how to put these Green's functions into covariant form, which we often want to do. We like to have often manifestly covariant form of everything, because then the transformation properties under Lorentz transformations are so completely sort of brain dead obvious. And one way to do that here is to use the following identity, that a Dirac delta function of x minus x prime squared is equal to a Dirac delta function, if I expand out the square of this four vector, of delta of x naught minus x naught prime squared minus the distance x minus x prime squared. This in turn can be written as the delta function of this product, delta of x naught minus x naught prime minus capital R times x naught minus x naught prime plus capital R. And as we know from the rules of manipulating Dirac delta functions, that's equal to 1 over 2r times the delta function of x naught minus x naught prime minus r plus 1 over 2r delta of x naught minus x naught prime plus r. So we can conclude that the covariant forms of these two Green's functions can be expressed as dr for the retarded Green's function of argument x minus x prime equals 1 over 2 pi theta of x naught minus x naught prime times delta function of this invariant quantity x minus x prime squared, which, as you recall, that will be that second delta function is the same in every inertial reference frame. And similarly, the advanced Green's function dA of x minus x prime equals 1 over 2 pi theta of x naught prime minus x naught. Now, you might still be concerned that the theta function in both of these expressions appears to be non-invariant, but claim that it is in fact an invariant because it is constrained, its non-zero values are constrained by the Dirac delta function. So here, basically, theta simply selects the forward or backward light cone for the retarded or advanced waves, respectively. And so, for instance, as usual, then we can use this Green's function to solve for the vector potential solution of our inhomogeneous wave equation as a superscript alpha of x is equal to a superscript alpha of some pre-existing solution that's not created by the source plus 4 pi over c the integral d4x prime of the retarded Green's function dr of x minus x prime times j alpha of x prime. I believe this is a typo, because I think this j alpha here should be a superscript, because everything else, we're talking about the covariant components of a alpha, and since dr is an invariant, I believe I can go ahead and correct this here. I'm not sure what I was thinking when I wrote that, but I'm pretty sure that is the correct equation. Just as one aside, it might be a desirable to make dr manifestly invariant, instead of just this argument about the theta function restricting which light cone we're on. And there is a way to do that. You can write this theta function, theta of z naught, by introducing a four vector, which is, this is just kind of a notational gimmick, right? This, the following four vector will introduce eta superscript alpha, which is 1, 0, 0, 0 in our reference frame, where we're going to maybe make the observations, which of course would be the vector 1 and this 0. And then the quantity z0, which is the contraction of the full 4-vector z superscript alpha with eta sub alpha. This then is an invariant in any frame. Any contraction of two 4-vectors, of course, is an invariant in any frame. And so that means we can write the retarded invariant Green's function, dr of z, as theta of z alpha contracted with eta alpha times Dirac delta function of z beta contracted with z sub beta, all over 2 pi. And now we do have a truly manifestly invariant form of our Green's function. So also, we are going to need the covariant current as the last thing in chapter 12 I want to cover. We will need the covariant current associated with a moving point charge. And so let's start with some given inertial reference frame K. And in that frame K, let's call R vector of T the position of that point charge as it's moving around in this reference frame. Then we know the charge density, the charge per unit volume rho of XT, is equal to Q times the value of the point charge, Q times three-dimensional Dirac delta function, delta of x vector minus r of t, where r of t is the trajectory as seen in reference frame K. Similarly, the current density, j of xt, is q v of t times the Dirac delta function of position, delta of x minus r of t, where this v of t is the instantaneous velocity as measured in k at time t, dr of t dt. So the appropriate contravariant 4-vector that includes the information about both rho and j, I claim, can be written as j superscript alpha, the contravariant components of j, equals q times c times the integral over the proper time of the particle of u superscript alpha of t times the four-dimensional Dirac delta function, delta of x minus r of tau. And here r of tau is equal to or it's defined to be c times t as the time component of this 4-vector, and r of t for the spatial part of the 4-vector. That's how it is defined to equal in frame K, the frame where we actually have determine the trajectory r of t of this particle. And the four velocity at proper time tau in our frame is gamma times c for the time component and gamma v of t for the space component of this four vector as seen in frame K. And don't forget that the source proper time tau is going to be connected to the clock time in frame K through d tau is dt over the gamma of the particle, gamma v of t. In other words, the clock, the proper time clock tau, can be written as the integral dt if we know the velocity is a function of time in frame K, as the integral dt over gamma associated with v of t. And then j alpha of x is equal to qc, the integral over a dummy time variable dt prime gamma v inverse times gamma v times the four vector c comma v of t prime delta of ct minus ct prime times the three-dimensional Dirac delta function delta of x minus r of t prime. Okay, so this confirms that this will give the charge density times c for the time part of the j alpha 4 vector, and it gives j of xt as the space part of that 4 vector. Okay. So we are now ready to move on to chapter 14, a really important chapter, radiation by moving charges. So now let's consider a moving charge. And for that moving charge Q, let's let R alpha of tau be the space-time position 4 vector of this charge as a function of its proper time tau. Then, as we saw in a specific inertial frame K, this R alpha of tau looks like Ct of tau, which is a monotonic function of tau, and r of vector of tau for the space part of that 4 vector. And tau of t is this integral. We'll start the integral from 0, so it's an integral from 0 to t, gamma v of t inverse dt. In other words, d tau is, again, as I said before, is gamma v of t inverse dt. And just to remind you, gamma v of t inverse is square root of 1 minus v of t squared c squared. It's a always positive definite quantity, positive definite square root. So we can also write that v of tau is 1 over gamma of tau dr of tau d tau for the spatial part of the velocity. And what does that tau as a function of t look like? Because it is dilated, right, the rate of increase of tau is slower as time goes on than this unit slope line. It's all this tau of t should always lie below this slope. Only in the limit of zero velocity would you approach this unit slope line? So now the four velocity of charge Q, U alpha of tau, is d by d tau r alpha of tau, which is gamma v of tau times the four vector c comma v of tau. And then the electromagnetic potentials generated by this charge particle motion can be found using our Green's function that we found before. Let's suppose there are no other fields or vector potentials or scalar potentials present before this charge Q comes through our neighborhood. Then the four potential produced by this moving charge is going to equal 4 pi over c, the integral d4x prime, times our invariant Green's function, our retarded Green's function dr of x minus x prime, times j alpha of x prime, the contravariant components again. What does this equation assume? Don't forget what physics is in this equation. It assumes there are no incident fields, as I just said, and it assumes there are no boundary surfaces, if we're using the invariant Green's function corresponding to no boundary surfaces. So let's go ahead and plug in this simplest representation of our invariant Green's function, the retarded Green's function, as theta of x naught minus x naught prime, to select the forward light cone. So the charge's motion jiggling will produce waves going outward from it. That theta function divided by 2 pi multiplies the Dirac delta function of this invariant x minus x prime squared. So plugging that in here and plugging in our j alpha of x prime here as qc integral d tau u alpha of tau delta 4 of x minus r of tau gives us this expression for the scalar and vector potential 4 vector a alpha of x generated by this moving charge is equal to 2q times integral d tau u alpha of tau and then an integral d4 of x prime. Theta of x naught minus x naught prime. Delta function of x minus x prime squared. And four-dimensional delta function of x prime minus r of tau. Kind of an interesting expression with a theta function, a delta function, and then another, a delta function of an invariant, x minus x prime squared, and then a delta function of a four vector, x prime minus r of tau. So to evaluate this integral, find the radiation caused by this moving charge. Let's first evaluate this integral over d4 x prime, which is simple because we have a delta function in x prime, which simply means we evaluate everything else in the integrand at the 4 vector x prime equal to the 4 vector r of tau, which is the particle's trajectory. information. So that is trivially accomplished. We making those replacements of every primed variable with the R of tau variables, four vector components, we get A alpha of x is equal to 2q integral d tau u alpha of tau. We're still left with the theta function. Now, this argument is x naught minus r zero of tau. And we're still left with the invariant delta of x minus r of tau squared. So let's try to think about the big picture here and consider the particle's trajectory as viewed with respect to an observation point. So let's place at the center of our light cone the observation point x, which has a time component x naught, a space component vector x. And so now we have here r of tau on our time-space diagram. We have its trajectory in green here, r of tau, the particle coming along, changing its position in some way versus time. As time increases, going upward. And so, again, if we have an observation point here, it is going to be able to feel or detect field disturbance coming only from earlier times. Okay, so the motion of the charge at an earlier time that follows the light cone, right? Because we know any disturbance, electromagnetic field disturbance caused when the particle is at this location, at this time, is going to be experienced at the detector at some different position, at some later time. It will have to follow the light cone. There are no waves coming out in Maxwell's equations that can propagate at any other velocity in free space with there are no dielectrics assumed to be present. So these waves come along the light cone and are experienced at our observation point at this time and at this location of the detector. Okay, so again, for the observation point at this time and position, there will only be a single physically relevant intersection with the light cone. We could call this R of tau naught, which is the point where the light cone intersects the particle's trajectory in the past. So if we know this particle trajectory, we know we've chosen an observation time. We can just simply take the light cone backward, find an intersection with the trajectory, and that will be the relevant time when this integral is going to give a non-zero contribution. So we need to find that intersection. We'll have to solve for the root of where x minus r of tau squared is equal to zero. And we can find that there will be actually two roots, x naught minus r naught of tau naught will equal plus or minus the distance between vector x and the vector r of tau naught. When we take the square root of both sides of the equation, only the plus sign will give the past intersection. The minus sign would give the future, which would correspond, right, to us detecting waves, and those waves only came from charges jiggling in the future, which we normally think causality is not going to allow to come to our detector. Turning on our detector today, we don't usually detect waves right now that are caused by charges jiggling tomorrow. Okay. Now to go further, let's use the following identity, the Dirac delta function, don't forget, as a function of x, will be a sum over all roots, sum over I delta of x minus xi, sum over all points where f of xi is equal to 0, but you have to divide each root by the magnitude of the derivative of f of x evaluated at that root. So this means we can write delta of the contraction of x minus r of tau square with itself, which we call x minus r of tau squared. We can write that as delta of tau minus tau naught, the proper time where that retarded intersection occurred, divided by the magnitude, the absolute value of d by d tau of x minus r of tau squared, evaluated at tau equals to tau naught. And that derivative, we can evaluate d by d tau of x minus r of tau squared is equal to d by d tau, can write out the contraction explicitly of x of the just the covariant components, then we have both vectors in the square, and then we'll have to include a metric tensor, g alpha beta. So we'll have x alpha minus r alpha of tau being differentiated, contracted with g alpha beta times x beta minus r beta of tau. And don't forget, it will all be evaluated at tau naught. And that derivative is clearly going to be minus twice dr alpha of tau d tau times x alpha minus r alpha of tau evaluated at tau naught. So we can now put that together into our expression that we had derived above. A alpha of tau is 2q integral d tau of u alpha of tau theta of x naught minus r naught of tau delta of x minus r of tau squared. And the final answer is A alpha of x is equal to q u alpha of tau over the magnitude, the absolute value of the four velocity dotted, contracted with the four position, x minus r of tau, all evaluated at that denominator at tau equals tau naught. And again, tau naught is the causality appropriate root of x minus r of tau naught squared, which we wrote above, the one where x naught is greater than r naught of tau naught. And don't, it's maybe worth mentioning that the denominator will in fact be positive definite, even if you did not include these absolute value signs. And you might want to think through why that is true. Maybe try to convince yourself why u of tau dotted into x minus r of tau is in fact going to be positive. So the bottom line is this is an important formula for the four potential associated with arbitrary motion of arbitrary trajectory of a charged particle. Of course, it does not include the effect that the charged particle will create its own vector potential and possibly act back and change the vector potential. This assumes the vector potential is there and given, and the particle moves through it. And that vector potential is not the vector potential. That vector potential. Yeah, it's not the potentials and forces, electromagnetic forces, that whatever caused the trajectory to be what it is. But it is the vector potential that is produced by the moving charge. And this formula, which this famous formula for A alpha of x, is called the Leonhard-Vickert potential, or the more common English pronunciation would be Leonhard-Vickert potential. But I tend to give this the German pronunciation, Vickert. So next we're going to investigate these potentials and fields. So let's work out this four-dimensional dot product or contraction of the four velocity at time tau naught with the difference between x and r of tau naught. Okay. So first of all, that will be the time component of u of tau naught times the time component of x minus r of tau naught. That's written here, u naught of tau naught, which is gamma times the speed of light. You'll remember that's the four velocity time component. And the time component of x naught minus r naught of tau naught is c times our observation time minus the retarded time, which, because we're on the light cone, that's equal to the distance r between that retarded spatial point and our observation point. Okay, so we know that that's equal to capital R. And then there's minus the spatial part of u of tau dotted into the spatial part of x minus r of tau naught. So you have capital U of tau naught, the space part, dotted into the x minus r of tau naught space part. And again, the light cone constraint says x naught minus r naught of tau naught is equal to capital R, and so that also equals x at the observation point minus r at the retarded point and time. Those are both equal to capital R. Now we do sometimes need the vector n hat pointing in the direction of r, of the vector r, meaning the vector x minus r of tau naught. So that's the vector r over the magnitude of r, or writing it out explicitly, it's the vector x minus r of tau naught over the distance between x and r of tau naught. So with all that, this contraction of u dotted into x minus r of tau works out to equal gamma times c times capital R minus gamma, the spatial ordinary velocity, lowercase u of tau naught, minus n hat r, which is a way of writing r vector, three vector. And that simplifies to gamma times c times capital R times the quantity 1 minus beta dot n hat after I factor out the gamma C capital R. Okay, so don't forget that expression. This will be used at various times in the future derivations. And beta, of course, is the velocity, the ordinary 3 velocity of the particle at the retarded time tau naught divided by the speed of light. So again, just to reiterate, the retarded time in our reference frame, we can call tau sub r, this obeys c times t minus tr is equal to the distance x vector minus r of tau naught, and that is equal to the physical distance between the position at the retarded time and the observation point. So also, in other words, C times TR, this retarded time, is equal to the time component of the 4 vector R naught of T naught. And again, this is just a general coordinate, spatial coordinate system, x, y, z, and a sort of a fourth dimension of time. The particle is moving along. And again, we're going to observe at this position, x, at time t. And this will only be sensitive to waves generated at time tau naught at this position of the particle and at this vector capital R from the emission point to the observation point. So what we've shown is that the 4 vector, the potential 4 vector at an observation time and position 4 vector x is equal to q times gamma times c comma u, lowercase u, the ordinary velocity in our frame, divided by gamma times c times the distance r to the appropriate retarded time, times in the denominator 1 minus beta vector dot n to n hat, or rewriting the components of that 4 potential. This means phi of x t is equal to q over 1 minus beta dot n hat times r, right? The c's above and below cancel, and the gammas above and below cancel. And the vector, the 3 vector potential, a of xt in our inertial frame, in the reference frame K, will equal Q times beta being U over C, divided by 1 minus beta dot N hat, and then times capital R. So I'm just trying to remember why there is no C in this expression. Because let's, oh, right. We have just u over c. This c does not multiply. It's in the time component. Okay, I confused myself for a moment there. All right. So now we can calculate the electromagnetic fields, the electric and magnetic field. And of course, we could calculate those from these potentials directly using the known relation for the fields in terms of phi and A. But it turns out to be simpler if we use this integral expression and do it starting from this point. Instead of first evaluating this integral and then taking the derivatives we need to get E and B, we will instead start with the integral and not evaluate it yet and start taking the derivatives of this. So the thing quantities we will need to get the field strength tensor, once we have the field strength tensor, we can read off the E and B fields, of course. So we will need these kind of quantities like D superscript alpha, the contravariant derivatives of the contravariant four potential components. That's what we will need to determine F alpha beta. Once we have all those derivatives, we can then extract E and B. So let's look at d alpha acting on a beta and bring the derivative inside the integral. So we have 2q integral d tau of u beta of tau, d alpha acting on delta of x minus r of tau squared. Times, of course, the theta function that will enforce causality. Now, in fact, there will be also terms involving the derivative of the theta function, which involve this delta function of capital R. But these don't survive at non-zero displacements of the observation from the emission or from the emission point, and so we'll ignore those. We'll assume we do have some distance between observation and the charge at the emission point. Okay, so remember this d alpha here in this integral, it's only acting on x. And so let's abbreviate the contravariant derivative of this invariant delta function as d alpha delta of f, where f is this contraction of x minus r of tau with itself, or in other words, x minus r of tau squared, which means d alpha acting on delta of f will be d alpha f, by the chain rule, times the total derivative d by df of delta of f. And that means that's equal to the contravariant derivative of f, d alpha f, times d tau df times d by d tau of delta of f. Moreover, we have some other identities that d alpha acting on f is d alpha acting on x minus r of tau squared, which I guess we worked out earlier, is equal to twice x alpha minus r alpha of tau. And secondly, df d tau is minus twice x minus r of tau dotted into the 4 velocity capital U of tau. And so d d alpha of delta of x minus r of tau squared equals minus this 4 vector x alpha minus r alpha of tau in the numerator divided by this contraction of capital U of tau dotted into x minus r of tau, and the tau derivative of delta of x minus r of tau squared. If we plug this now into that above integral we had for d alpha a beta and integrate by parts, it's going to give the following. D alpha a beta is 2q integral d tau. There's still the theta function, undifferentiated, times delta of x minus r of tau squared is still there. And then it's times the tau derivative of x alpha minus r alpha of tau times u beta, capital U beta of tau, divided by this scalar, Lorentz scalar, or Lorentz invariant contraction of x minus r of tau dotted into u of tau. This whole derivative is d by d tau, and you're integrating that d tau. Of course, the integration by parts will also give these some surface terms I have not written, because these will vanish since they're not going to turn out to be on the light cone. So now let's again use this identity we worked out before. Delta of x minus r of tau squared is delta of tau minus tau naught over twice capital U of tau contracted with x minus r of tau. So that finally we have f alpha beta of x works out to be the scalar quantity out front, q over x minus r of tau naught dotted into capital U of tau naught times derivative with respect to tau naught of x minus r of tau naught alpha component times the beta component of capital U of tau naught minus x minus r of tau naught beta component times U alpha of tau naught all over x minus r of tau naught dotted into capital U of tau naught. And we have to continue to adhere to these conditions that x minus r of tau naught squared is equal to zero, which is our condition to be on the light cone, and that x naught is greater than r naught of tau naught, which is our causality condition, that charges jiggling now produce fields at a later time, not at an earlier time. Okay, so let's put this together and determine the fields and use these formulas. I guess we have already seen each of these equations. 1, 2, they should all look familiar. Of course, capital U alpha in 2 is just the definition of the 4 velocity of the particle at retarded time tau naught. We use this definition, d by d tau naught of x minus r of tau naught alpha is minus dr alpha d tau evaluated at tau equals tau naught, because x is independent of tau naught, which is just minus the 4 velocity capital U alpha of tau naught. And we have the tau naught derivative of U alpha of tau naught is equal to C times d gamma of tau naught d tau naught for the time component of this 4 vector. And the space component has two pieces, d gamma of tau naught d tau naught times the ordinary lowercase u 3 velocity u of tau naught plus gamma squared of tau naught a of tau naught, where a is the ordinary acceleration du d tau naught. here we've used the fact that du d tau is gamma du dt is equal to gamma a. Sorry, so a is du dt in our reference frame, not du d tau naught. I misspoke. And one more identity we'll need is just work out d gamma d tau is gamma d tau. If you work out the derivative, or gamma times minus a half gamma cubed times the quantity minus 2 lowercase u dot a over c squared. And that we can write, combine these gamma and gamma cubed to give a gamma to the fourth power, interestingly, times beta dotted into d beta dt. So, sorry, there's a lot of steps in this derivation, but we are getting close. So du alpha d tau naught is this four vector, c gamma to the fourth, beta dotted into beta dot, and then c gamma to the fourth, beta dotted into beta dot times beta, plus c gamma squared beta dot. So our fifth equation, I'm going to keep track of these by numbers because they'll be useful at various times in our derivation, gives d by d tau naught of u of tau naught dot x minus r of tau naught is equal to du of tau naught d tau naught dotted into x minus r of tau naught minus the four velocity contracted with itself, which is gamma squared times c squared minus u squared, which is in fact exactly equal to c squared. That's identity 5. Identity 6 says u of tau naught dotted into x minus r of tau is equal to gamma cr times 1 minus beta dot n hat, which was derived above. I'm not sure that page number is correct. That might be wrong. Identity 7 is du d tau naught dotted into x minus r of tau naught is this c gamma to the fourth beta dot dotted into beta all times r, capital R, minus this quantity in brackets, c gamma to the fourth beta dot times beta plus gamma squared c beta dot all time dotted into a three-dimensional dot product of capital R n hat. And put all those pieces together, and maybe I can spare you this algebra. But we have finally f alpha beta of x, putting these pieces together. And there is one term here that works out to be zero in that sum. And then finally, putting all those pieces together, we have this long expression for the field strength tensor, the alpha beta components. And once we have that, we can read off the fields. We know the electric field components of the contravariant field strength tensor. The ith component will equal Fi, 0. And after you do a little more algebraic simplification, we get the compact form for that field, that electric field, given in equation 14.14, E of xt in our reference frame k equals q times n hat minus the full beta vector, right? The ordinary 3 velocity divided by the speed of light at the retarded time divided by gamma squared, the distance squared to the retarded point, times 1 minus beta dot n hat, all evaluated at the retarded point, plus q over c times n hat vector cross n hat minus beta vector cross beta dot over r times 1 minus beta dot n hat quantity cubed at the retarded time. And the b vector at x and t turns out to equal simply n hat crossed e at the retarded time. Note also in the electric field that only the second term will be a radiation term that propagates energy to infinity, because only that term has a dependence of 1 over capital R. So I do just want to point out that the Griffiths E&M text, which is frequently used as the undergraduate E&M textbook, this gives an alternative derivation if you're really interested in seeing it, and if you find the above derivation I just went through and all those identities a bit annoying, you can find an alternative way to derive the fields. It's sort of direct, the Griffiths derivation, but brute force, and it works by defining an auxiliary vector W, which is C times R hat minus U, and works through the derivation of that. That's a lowercase u, of course. And that gives this form for the electric field. E of xt is qr over capital R vector dotted into w quantity cubed, all times the bracket w times c squared minus u squared plus capital R cross W cross A. And again, B of XT is N hat cross E. Okay. So I think that is maybe a pretty good place to end today's lecture. And next time, we will discuss the Larmor formula for the radiation by an accelerated charge, one of the most important formulas to learn about charged particle motion and the fields they create, the radiation by an accelerated charge. So you might read ahead. We'll discuss the properties of that radiation, how much power is radiated, its angular distribution of that power, and related topics. And so I'll end there. I'll see you next time. Goodbye.